going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome back into our Draft Fest Sunday recap coverage, talking about the Saints' 9 selections in the 3 days of the draft and helping us break all that down. Sam Bruckhaus, former Tulane linebacker, now a Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and also a data mad scientist, joining us here to help us break down these picks. Man, how was your draft, Sam? How's it going today?
It's been awesome. I did about 10 to 15 hours of live streams watching the draft. It's just exciting, especially being an ex-player and of course, seeing some Tulane guys come off the board as well, that these guys' lives are being changed and they're moving into, professional football that we all take so much stock in, we all love to watch. And so really, I love the draft because it's just a jubilant affair all around.
Curious your thoughts. So I'll start with the Saints and their second round selection of Tyler Shuck, making waves a lot of folks around the NFL. And just curious what you think of the Louisville quarterback.
So there's certainly pros and cons to this selection. The pro is that, number one, typically in the data, we have a problem where we never know which quarterback will be correct. You try to pick the guy who will fit your system the best, and it seems that is what Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis did with this selection. When you draft quarterbacks, it's kind of like rolling the dice, and I'm glad they did it, especially given, the questions about Derek Carr. We also have Spencer Rattler on the roster. It will give the Saints many options at the quarterback position, which is so important. The only item that I would criticize a little bit is typically when you start getting out of expected draft position range. All these teams have models, and the public has a model as well. Tyler Shuck was kind of pretty far away from that selection. It was a little bit of a reach. I thought they could have waited a little bit longer. But at the same time, the quarterback pressure that teams feel is immense. You never know when a run is going to happen on quarterbacks, and everyone needs one. So all around, I'm okay with the selection, and I'm excited to see how Tyler Shuck performs in mini camp. Just a little bit of background on him. His superpower is not getting sacked. And I know throughout the most recent years, sacks and negative plays have killed the Saints offensively, especially last year where we were able to get our run game kind of going, and then we'd hit that negative play. Shuck avoids negative plays, and I think that's going to be the key for his success at the next level.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you talk about reach because it's like, okay, you're picking at 40, then you have a pick at 71. So would people have preferred not picking him at 40 and then giving up more assets to go up from 71 to wherever you felt comfortable with? So it's kind of tough because if that's the quarterback, you got to go get him. I do think that's an interesting point because I hear people talk about throwaways. And one thing that I think young quarterbacks in the NFL struggle with is the understanding of when a play is dead, when to dirt a ball so that you can live to play another down. Like Caleb Williams, for example, it's like half the sacks he takes seems like, dude, the play's over. Like, I get it. You can extend a play. You did this in college, but you're hurting your team. The game against the Vikings last year was an example of that, where they went to I think it was overtime. He took a crazy sack after holding onto the ball for 10 seconds. And so I think, like, the context has to matter. And when you talk about an older quarterback, he's 25, going to be 26, coming into the NFL, I don't view throwaways as a negative trait. I view it as a pro-ready trait as long as the throwaways are not panic-driven. And I think that's the concern with Tyler is he sees pressure, and at times you see on tape there's a little bit of panic. But there's also some really good tape of navigating pressure, sliding out, keeping his shoulders square so that he can release the ball. He can get a quick release, even rolling away from his arm side. So I'm just like, I think that's an interesting conversation to have over, okay, a lot of throwaways, but throwaways aren't necessarily a negative thing.
Yeah, and we highlight this really beautifully on SoomerSports.com. You can go to our draft guide and check out some of the draft picks that the Saints have made. And we basically have it broken down. When he drops back to pass, what ends up happening? And so he has a really, really low scramble rate, as you were kind of highlighting. One of the lower ones among NCAA quarterbacks last year. But he has a pretty good sack rate. He's not taking bad sacks. And as you noted, the way that he gets out of pressure is by throwing the ball away. We have those further broken down with pressure. Again, the pressure to sack ratio is excellent. Even when he does receive pressure, he's not going to take a sack when it comes down to it. Typically, he's going to limit those negative plays. And frankly, we saw Bo Nix, for example, and I think that's kind of the path to success, even though Bo Nix did have a little bit more upside scrambling to a certain degree. But we saw Bo Nix last year be able to totally limit sacks. He was one of the players who lost the least EPA, expected points added, basically putting yards in context of down, distance, and place on the field. He lost the least EPA. That's why he was successful, even in the face of, you know, having some struggles with accuracy, not necessarily, you know, being a top quarterback, but because he limited his sacks so well, and also was able to make it into other plays. That was his superpower. It's the same kind of formula for Tyler Shuck as well.
Sam, we talked to you about positional value, and the Raiders taking the swing with Ashton Jeddy with the 6th overall pick. His rookie contract worth approximately $32 million fully guaranteed. It's the second highest paid running back in terms of guaranteed money in the NFL. And that was kind of what you had warned about, taking a running back that high. Same thing with like the tight end position. The Saints going with Kelvin Banks, though, left tackle. It's obviously, in terms of the money paid out to the position, a premium position. Your thoughts on the selection at pick 9?
So when I go back and look at the great Saints years, even all the way back to the Super Bowl year, the kind of hidden story is that they just had excellent offensive linemen. I'm talking like 2 or 3 Pro Bowlers. My background on my work computer that I'm looking right now is the Pro Bowl year with Michael Thomas and Cam Jordan. And you notice that Teron Armstead and some of these other guys were Pro Bowlers during that time. So I think what the Saints are trying to do, and I think this is the real takeaway from the Eagles, it's not necessarily that the Eagles got Saquon Barkley. It's that they have 3 borderline Hall of Fame linemen and potentially 5 Pro Bowlers. At least one got paid. The one that wasn't a Pro Bowler, Mekhi Becton, went to the Chargers and got some serious payment as a result of his efforts. And I think that's what the Saints are trying to do. Here's a little bit more about Kelvin Banks. I think teams were substantially higher on him after the combine than the media was. I think the media got kind of caught up in Armand Mimbu's excellent combine performance and immediately as a result projected him to be the second best tackle. He did end up going second, but as we saw, tackles were flying off the board. And, you know, when I talk to our scouts that we have at Sumer Sports, they also think that Kelvin Banks can swing across the line. He can play guard. Obviously, we have Trevor Penning, and we also have Fuaga, who were highly drafted as well. He can play guard. He can kind of play all over the place. I just think it's an excellent pick because more and more we're starting to see teams go after these swing offensive linemen, and they always end up being excellent players. And here's another item that I got from teams. Obviously, we don't necessarily have character grades here at Sumer Sports. When I was talking to my friends who were data analysts, they actually picked up that guys with super high character grades end up being excellent swing offensive linemen. There's a pretty good correlation between that, or at least a correlation that they felt was important. And Kelvin Banks is one of the highest character guys in this draft class. I think when you mix the character aspects, the positional value aspects, and then the idea that he can play multiple places across the line, and he was immensely productive in college, it was just a good by the book, you know, strike pick.
Looking at things, Sam, I think the biggest, I guess, newsworthy stuff from the draft was definitely the fall of a guy like Shedeur Sanders that was documented. I think, you know, some were expecting the Saints to take him at 9. Then he ended up, all right, he's going to get picked by the Steelers at number 21. And then when that didn't happen, it was like, uh-oh, where's this guy going to land? But I don't think the drop was expected to be that dramatic. Curious on, one, what did you think of what happened in that situation there? And two, what are the Cleveland Browns doing taking, you know, two quarterbacks in this year's draft class and how they end up?
So again, I'm a data scientist. I try to limit it to the data.
Okay,
So in my standpoint, this was clearly kind of a one-of-one event that had other things going on. You look at Shedeur Sanders' data profile, his superpower was accuracy. His accuracy was similar to, you know, some guys like Justin Fields, Mac Jones coming out of college. Obviously, their career didn't turn out exactly correctly, but they were highly touted at the time just to get a sense of, you know, where he probably would have projected into the draft. His accuracy was similar to that, very high, one of the highest that we had in recent years here at Sumer Sports using our millisecond by millisecond accuracy ratings. The downside was the sacks, basically the opposite of Tyler Shuck. Not a good pressure-to-sack ratio, took way too many sacks, and the worry was those negative plays. But Jaden Daniels, for example, struggled with sacks as well at LSU, was able to limit that last year. But all that to say, he's still projected to be a solid day one or day two quarterback. I think the side kind of bar that people didn't really expect is that if you look at these teams' rosters, there's 6 to 8 teams that are still evaluating quarterbacks on their rookie contract. That's an immensely high number historically. And as a result, only a few teams really needed quarterbacks. And I think they were kind of playing a game of chicken in day one and day two of who could kind of wait it out the longest and still get some good players at the other positions. The real question that I have is once you start getting to day two, you can go ahead and select a backup quarterback and feel good about it. We've seen Jalen Hurts come off the board, Dak Prescott come off the board, and those ended up working out. I was kind of shocked that no one took the chance until the Browns way down the line. Talking about the Browns, obviously they have Dylan Gabriel. They liked him more. Politics aside, because there could be a lot of kind of ramifications of selecting Dylan Gabriel, then all of a sudden going and selecting Shedeur Sanders. But I think they're going to get their reps ironed out in rookie camp, see who they like, and continue evaluating reps into training camp. I think it'll be an excellent quarterback challenge. The one problem coming from teams, which people don't really think about, is there's only so many reps in training camp, and typically you want to give those to your top guys to get ready for the season. They have so many guys they're going to have to maybe reevaluate how they are going to set up those reps just to try to figure it out. But for the most part, I'm okay with, you know, grabbing the value of Shedeur Sanders that deep in the draft, especially given he projected as a certified, you know, kind of round one, round two guy.
Sam, you mean there's no data for a Hall of Fame dad that likes to meddle in your business?
So I came up in the basketball business, right? I worked with Langston Galloway, who has played for the Pelicans, is from Baton Rouge for years and years. And so I know a lot of people in that industry, and there's a lot of great Tulane alum in that industry as well. And so I was kind of asking around if they had seen something like this before. What kind of came up were two items, Bol Bol, for example, the former son or the son of Manute Bol. Yeah. There was kind of character concerns there, but it really had nothing to do with the relationship to his dad. That was one item that came up. And then the second one, obviously, was the Bronny James and LeBron James item, where there was real questions if someone selected Bronny, if LeBron would ask to go to that team. He ended up going to Lakers. I think it was wildly different there because Bronny really wasn't, you know, he's a borderline NBA G League level guy. Also high, super high character. Everyone thought he was a good kid. He had a heart attack, which was a whole other thing. And LeBron obviously is still one of the best players in the league. So it was a totally different value calculation. But those were two items that did come up when I was asking around the industry of something similar to that. And frankly, neither of those guys were the level of prospect or the level of positional importance that Shedeur Sanders were at. So as I said, this is kind of a crazy event. I'm kind of shocked it went this far.
You know, going back to your computer background, one of the things I remember about that photo that I think a lot of people forget, Larry Warford is in it. Like, you're talking about, oh, you have all these players. That's Larry right. Horford was a Pro Bowler for that team. Like, that's the type of offensive line you were looking at. Even the guys you forget about were Pro Bowlers.
Exactly.
So, you know, I know you're a data guy, so I'm sure you have the numbers on this. What would you, you know, if you have one or two for each, what would you say were the biggest steals of this draft? Not necessarily for the Saints, but just overall. And what were some of the biggest reaches of this draft?
Yeah, so we talked about the running back thing earlier. I think that was kind of a big reach. I would not advise as an analyst to go and get a running back Ashton Jeanty with pick six. That's not saying it's not going to turn out well. There's just so much expectation. He basically has to be, you know, a top five guy immediately. But then you look at what teams like the Ravens did, for example. Malachi Starks falls to them. They pick him up. They're going to put him in a big position to succeed. There were some, you know, questions about why he was falling. Based on our metrics, there are some questions more than just pop up on the tape about his coverage ability. But I think they're going to put him in a position to succeed. And then, you know, character concerns aside, for example, I know there's a lot around Mike Green, but just looking at the data, he was immensely effective, an excellent pressure rate. They end up picking him up, you know, way, way, way down the line. So I think that was a pretty good get. And then let's talk about the trades a little bit as well. You look at the NFC South, the Panthers and the Falcons were highly active. I think it was a little bit of a push for that James Pierce trade. I think the Rams maybe pulled the wool over the Giants' eyes and then used that to kind of ask a lot of the Falcons as well. Giving up a next year first-round pick for the 26th pick in the draft seems, you know, pretty crazy, and now the Rams are positioned to basically replace Matthew Stafford immediately. That was kind of a reach. But then you look at what the Panthers did. You know, I'm a little biased. My old boss, Eric Eager, now is their VP of analytics. The trades up that they did what we like to call pick swaps. So there was a 4-for-4 pick swap that people were saying, you know, it got to be easier than this. But the whole point of that is that both teams end up kind of getting the same value, but it's in different places. And so, for example, they end up getting Nick Skorton Donovan Ezeraku as Princely Umen Mielen from Ole Miss. And as a result, they fill a position of need and don't lose too much value. I like the trade that happened. So those were kind of the four items and four teams that I thought did a interesting job that caught my eye.
And Sam, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you about the big splash trade at the very top of the draft, the Browns trading the number 2 overall pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who moved up and drafted Travis Hunter. Meanwhile, the Jaguars moved on from their 5th overall pick, a second round pick this year, the 36th overall pick, which ended up turning into Quinshon Judkins, the 4th round pick, and then a 2026 first round pick, all just to move up those three spots. I know that Travis Hunter is a unicorn, but it was a heavy price to pay for James Gladstone, the new GM there.
Yeah, the bet's pretty simple. The bet is that he's going to be a Pro Bowl level player at two positions, as far as I see it. Now, is that going to happen? Probably not. We've never really seen it ever happen before. But if you're just looking at the sheer compensation, it seems like the bet is A, Travis Hunter is a unicorn, and B, we're going to play him at both positions. And as a result, that first round pick last year is actually going to roll over into this year. And we're going to get two players, Travis Hunter, the offensive player, and Travis Hunter, the defensive player. My understanding from the press conferences is they're going to allow him to play both ways, but he's primarily going to be an offensive player. I think if you look at the positional value, that probably makes sense to a certain degree. I personally thought he was a little better at the cornerback position. I thought you could play him down and down at the cornerback position and use him in packages on offense, a la kind of what Taysom Hill would do on offense as well. And like you said, it's a steep price to pay. I don't know if I personally would have paid it, but he was the only blue chip eye-popping guy in this draft. And if you're a first-time GM, I guess you want to make a splash. You want to get a culture guy. Travis Hunter is the guy probably to do that for.
Sam, definitely love all the insights you give here. I want to give you a chance here. Let fans know out there, all the hoodats that consider themselves to the football nerds, if you would say, what they can find at sumersports.com. I know great analytics stuff on your site.
Yeah, so we're actually coming out with a little documentary on Monday about former Saint Jonathan Casillas. from undrafted to unforgettable. You can check that out on all of our channels. We're going to have an excellent write-up on him, a really cool documentary. And if you want to learn a little bit more about a Saints legend and a member of that excellent Super Bowl team, check it out at Sumer Sports on Twitter, X, or sumersports.com. That's S-U-M-E-R sports.com.
Sam the Man Brookhouse, thanks so much for the time, and happy end of draft. Enjoy the rest of the weekend as we get ready now for mini camps to crank up.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. I got the NBA playoffs pulled up, so I'm excited to watch a little basketball after 6 months of football, or even more.
Right. Thank you, Sam, for the time today. Former Tulane linebacker, Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst, and data scientist Sam Brookhouse joining us there. Always got a wealth of knowledge. Appreciate hearing from him. I know he's probably gassed too after all his coverage.